You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another episode of Mixed Mental Arts with Brian Callen and fresh from the, what's the area you're in?
The empty quarter.
The empty quarter of Saudi Arabia?
Of the Arabian Peninsula.
The Arabian Peninsula. That's probably a humbling place to look out across.
Yep. It lets you know how dependent you are on civilization to not die.
As a kid, we used to go to the dunes mm-hmm. in Saudi Arabia, the great sand dunes. And it's literally, as far as the eye can see, just dunes.
Yep.
And it's incredible.
That was the other side of the empty quarter.
Is that what? Okay.
Yeah, we were on opposite sides of the empty quarter.
You have never... It's literally giant sand dunes... And you can, you know, you can. We used to roll down them, and it was just incredible. Played, you know, we'd run around on our bare feet. It was like literally giant sand dunes.
Yep.
It was so fantastic that it feels like it was a dream. And I was 12, 13 years old when I was running around, and you wouldn't want to go there in the summer because it's 130 degrees. And the Bedouin, you'd see them, the original Bedouin, they would be there tall, dark. And they would wrap themselves in either white sheets or black sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have these giant things around their heads and they could preserve and they'd go forever without water and see forever, apparently.
Yep.
The Bedou are famed for their sexual power and their eyesight.
And that's what you learned while you were there.
Well,
in
that's
the
why
empty
they
quarter.
Call me the city, Brian, the city Bedouin count.
Shake,
yes. Now, you know, it's fun because I have to say that having spoken to you and the books that we're reading and stuff, I'm learning to organize my brain at the young age of 49, soon to be 50. At least I'm learning, more about where to place my vitriol, my anger or just, you know, it's amazing. I was watching Putin, be presented to the Kremlin. He arrives and he walks this impossibly long red carpet and there are droves of people, 10 deep, waiting for his entrance as he's Vladimir Putin. And he comes in and they're all clapping for him as trumpets are playing. This is a king. He is a czar.
That's right.
And Russia has never shaken that. And if you say anything against the czar in modern day Russia, 2016, you can either love it or leave it. And if you're an opposition candidate, they'll shoot you in the middle of the day down in the Moscow Square.
Or poisoning. Putin is a big fan of poisoning.
Yes.
Or
what I was looking at is this culture and, you know, and the Russians are pretty amazing. I mean, you know, there's so much untapped potential and there's a lot to be sort of admired about Russian culture and I'm sure that, you know, and everything else. But I was just looking at their obsession with male strength, the patriarchy, this powerful strong man. And we've talked about this before, but I was watching it and I was like, boy, the irony is you are just making your country weaker.
Well, I think the important thing to realize is that there are different stages in the evolution of a country, right? And, you know, I mean, this is a large part of what Americans don't understand in general because they live in America. And so take someone like Thomas Woods. I think the best way to understand how Thomas Woods reaches his worldview is that he's a guy who grew up in a gated community, looked around and was like, why are there all these guards and walls? This is a prison. And it's like, no, it's not actually. You actually live in the greatest gated community in the world and all these people are protecting you from the grim, harsh realities of what societies looked like 10,000 years ago before the rise of agriculture.
Not 10,000 years ago.
Well, or what
in
they
the,
look...
In the West in the 1850s, read Blood Meridian. You know, there was a good chance as you were crossing the tundra, the plains, you were either going to get attacked by Native Americans or by white people, and then you were going to be, you know, have your genitals lopped off and thrown in your mouth so that they could disguise it and make it look like the Comanches had gotten to you.
Yep.
Either way, you were going to get in some trouble. There were gangs that would do things like prey on travelers and all kinds of stuff. So you know, whenever you have no order, you have Somalia.
Yep.
You know, if you're a real anarchist and a real libertarian, what happens is gangs spring up, roving bands of bandits in cars and trucks that do what they want. If you don't believe that, take a look at countries that don't have a strong, ready? And I'm a conservative, everybody. I know you'll call me a cuck. Don't call me a cuck. If you don't have a strong central government.
What?
I'm not saying a giant central government. And I know a lot of you are like, wait a minute. There's no such thing as a central government without being a giant central government.
Yeah.
It's true. Government has a tendency to grow and wants to grow like everything else. But, you know, don't burn it. They're revolutionaries, and there are a lot in 2016. Revolutionaries. Whether they're the alt-right or whoever they are, and I want to talk about the alt-right for a sec, but what they want to do is burn it down. They want to burn the whole structure down. I mean, you got radical feminists who want to burn the universities down. You got social justice warriors that want to smash the patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got... And that's how human beings, they love an enemy. They need a binary. They need sort of this duality that they can look at. I'm good. You're bad.
Yep.
Black, white. It's all that stuff. And so their methodology of thinking is exactly what has gotten us into trouble in the first place.
It's very easy to destroy a government. It's incredibly hard to build one. And it's very easy to see what's wrong with the current system and very hard to understand what the current system does. So, for example, if you have Libya, right, the Arab Spring, I mean, nobody's doubting that those dictators did terrible things. They did do terrible things. But what's happened is that they removed Gaddafi and then they slid into anarchy. And now you're going to find a lot of Libyans, if you talk to them, are like, man, kind of wish Gaddafi was back.
Yeah. You heard the same thing with Iraq.
Yeah.
I'm not advocating for a dictator or a strong man.
Well, but I think that's the point. Is
just the hardest thing is anytime you have a revolution and you take out the bad guy, most of the time throughout history, and the United States is a very rare example of where this didn't happen, most of the time there is a civil war.
And that's what we should talk about, is why is the United States the rare example? So you should wish for a dictator, right? There's the old Arab saying that it's better to live, you know, one day of, 1,000 years of tyranny than one day of anarchy. Mm. And anarchy is horrific. And so, you know, someone like Putin or Saddam Hussein or Gaddafi are the godfather. That's literally who they are.
Yeah.
They basically establish a monopoly on legitimate violence.
They're God.
Yeah. And only they get to kill people. Mm-hmm. And they rob their people blind. And it's a protection racket.
But there are rules that you can see, right? But there is a...
Well, the rule is the rule of the godfather.
Yeah.
As if you do what the godfather wants and you go along with
you'll probably be... sort of okay.
Okay-ish.
Yeah.
Unless...
Okay-ish.
Unless, of course, suddenly the godfather...
You live in the land of okay-ish.
Yeah, which is the best that you can hope for, but it is comparatively a step up from anarchy.
Yeah.
The challenge is then to move to rule of law, and rule of law is what happened in the Glorious Revolution in England.
It also happened in Latin America. Latin America, for the most part, went from military dictatorships mm-hmm. to... you know, sloppy democracies.
Well,
Russia did not.
Yeah. Well, the key thing is this crucial middle stage of rule of law, where you establish that everybody has to follow the law, even the king, even the godfather. And that is really rare in history. That's what happened in the Glorious Revolution in England in the 1660s, and that's what they talk about in Why Nations Fail. And so what that means is that when America had its revolution, it was able to transition from rule of law into democracy. So rather than, you know, the American people resorting back to violence to solve their problems, instead they had this sort of these notions of we talk our differences out, we work things out through courts, you know, there are systems and mechanisms in place, and so they're able to transition towards democracy. France, on the other hand, was like Libya. France was an absolutist monarchy. And so what happens is they only have monopoly of legitimate violence. And so when you remove the, you know, the Louis, the Saddam Hussein, the Gaddafi, what ends up happening is that there's no rule of law. And so instantly everybody resorts to violence and intimidation and fear to resolve their interpersonal differences. And you end up back at anarchy. Mm-hmm. So it's really, it's a series of stages where you move from anarchy to a monopoly on legitimate violence, to a rule of law, and then ultimately to democracy. Mm-hmm. And what someone like Thomas Woods doesn't understand is the fact that...
Michael Malice
doesn't understand is that...
Friends of the show.
Yeah, friends of the show.
With value.
But what they don't understand is that the monopoly on legitimate violence of government is literally the point of government. The whole point is that you don't want competition to happen through violence. You want competition to happen through ideas, through businesses, through...
Yeah, and if you don't have a police force,
yeah,
you are going to have private militias.
Well, the point is, if you have... I mean, you told
I'm going to do that right away. Dudes well, like me.
Yeah.
I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
Guys like me, and I don't... I consider myself... probably a little bit more violent than the average guy, would you say? I mean, just as far as like, I mean, not to be, but I just got back from sparring, right? My head's a little, I'm a little cloudy. I do that because I want to be ready for a fist fight if I have to get into one, right? I've always been that way. I never, from the age of, I remember my first judo class when I was 11, right? Not saying I'm a tough guy, but at least I understand the language a little bit. Guys like me, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go, holy fuck, there's no police. Dudes are trying to come rape my wife and my daughter. I'm buying the biggest, baddest German Shepherd. I'm going to teach that dog how to bite the fuck out of people. I'm going to have my AR-15s. I will have them placed everywhere, including on my roof. Mm-hmm. I will be calling my more violent friends that I can depend on. We will form a coalition. We'll live in the same block. And if you come down my street and you're in a group of guys, I'm going to have a fucking 12-gauge pistol grip Mossberg shotgun or maybe just regular stock. And it will be the shells will be full of double aught. I don't know if you know what that is. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter. Point is, I can shoot one shell into that car, and
yep.
I'm starting to sound like I'm from Texas. I'm going to shoot one shell into the window of that car, and I will kill everybody in there.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, I'm ready, and I think about that. And you're going to have a lot of guys like me. My reaction is not very different from anybody else. You're going to have a bunch of dudes like me
mm-hmm.
who are going to get gangs together to mm-hmm. protect their family. But the problem is, you're also going to have guys who are going to do it without families and who want money and who are sociopaths
and
who are way better at it than I am because they're willing to kill everybody.
Well, and that's the crucial thing is that you've changed the environment and, you know, there are now different cultural evolutionary pressures. So the point is that in this environment, the environment that we create with police and courts and all that sort of stuff.
Conflict resolution.
Yeah, there's conflict resolution, but fundamentally there's...
And contracts.
Yeah, and you've created
a disincentive. To ensure that somebody keeps their promises.
Yeah, and you've created a disincentive to murder. It is now disincentivized in this environment to murder because you're going to end up in jail, mm-hmm. right? There's a chance you get caught and you go to jail, right? And the better that chance is, the more you're like, no, I'm not going to do that, right? On the other hand, in an environment where you don't have those things, well, you know, what we know is that 1% of the population are psychopaths. Like, they literally 100%. Don't... Yeah, and so
but
that
I would also venture to say, and I'm all due respect to Michael Malice, who I love. I think Tom Woods has a lot of value. I've read one of his books. I thought it was great. I all due respect. I don't know that Michael and Tom have spent a lot of time around the kind of guys that I've spent around time with.
Right.
Like, I don't think they've spent time around dudes that are fighters or who are more apt to violence. I don't know, but and what I mean by that is, like, I don't know. Like, I remember hanging out with a bunch of tough guys, you know, and one guy was, there's always one guy in a group. If you're in a gym, a jiu-jitsu place or a boxing gym, there's always one guy who's a loose cannon. There's mm-hmm. just always one dude who you're like, Jesus, that guy definitely lives on, he's a criminal. And this girl walks by with this guy, and I never forgot this. He looks at that girl and he goes, you know what pisses me off, guys? I'm like, what? He goes, the fact that we got these bullshit laws, man. And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, I would take that girl right now and beat her boyfriend's ass. And he was dead serious.
Of course.
And I was like, there are a lot of you out there.
Yeah. And I think especially in the, you know, Joe Rogan community, right, which we are a satellite planet and, you know, orbiting around Joe, mm-hmm. right? Like the reason why this is called mixed mental arts is because a lot of you guys are into mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know that I think we're all comfortable in this audience that we are upgraded apes. Like, we are, you know, not that different from, you know, chimps, primates, like that's who we are. And there's a series of competing strategies. And the point is that, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, the thing that I have been doing over the holidays is like, so you don't really need to engage with the narco-capitalism. All you need to do is think about Lord of the Flies. Like,
you've been having some – you had Peter Schiff on.
Yeah, I had Peter Schiff on.
And you've gotten a lot of support for that interview, but you've also gotten a lot of
– a lot of flack.
Yeah, and I guess Peter's father – I did some research, and Peter's father died in federal prison for not paying his taxes.
He was a tax protester.
Yeah, so what you're dealing with Peter is a very emotional guy.
Yep.
I mean, the idea of big government – government killed his dad as far as he's concerned.
Yep, that's
so
correct.
You're talking about – a guy who was radicalized. I mean, mm-hmm. he must have loved his dad a lot, as we all do. And it's very hard to be rational or not to, well, it's very hard to not be extreme when you suffered something so personal. Well, I would venture to say that Peter may not be as rational an emissary, a missionary for the libertarian platform as others could be.
Well, it's very interesting because having just come back from the Middle East, I had a lot of conversations about fundamentalism and what is the nature of fundamentalist. How do you tell the difference between a fundamentalist and a non-fundamentalist? And the big thing in the Arab world is ijtihad, right? So there's jihad, mm-hmm. right, which is the idea of war or struggle.
Yeah.
And then ijtihad is the reflexive form of that.
Yeah,
so
it's
struggle with
your,
yourself.
Yes, yes.
And the point is that fundamentalists don't...
I didn't know there was a difference between ijtihad.
Yeah.
So what does ishti mean?
All Semitic languages revolve around three or four little roots. So you have like jihad. So there's a J, an H, and a D. But then what you can do is you can insert different letters or different vowels in the middle and create other words. So for example, if you insert, instead of having jihad, you have ijtihad, right? That IT form is always the reflexive form. So it's always struggle with yourself. And so what you find is in general, you know, my dad's like I have a friend of my dad's who's, you know, a Muslim cleric. He always says that it takes 3 seconds to become a fundamentalist and a lifetime to become a Muslim.
Oh, that's so great.
And that's the nature of fundamentalists is that, you know, you go and you sit with.
Because something resonates with your fast thinking brain.
That's right.
Right. Like Peter Schiff.
That's right.
He's got a great deal of fast thinking tissue
mm-hmm.
revolving around
blaming
anyone,
the government.
Anyone who talks about government.
Yeah. And he just, it's a, you know, the, if you're a Muslim fundamentalist.
Because all due respect to Peter Schiff and to all the people that support him, I listened to that podcast and I think he ran out of ammo.
Yeah.
I think he kind of wasn't prepared for your questions and what you had to say. And I started to hear kind of a fanatical. He kind of froze up.
Yeah.
It was like I thought he lost his train of thought for a second.
Oh, he did. He literally had brain freeze.
Yeah, and that's what happens. That's what happens to fundamentalists.
Well, so as an example of that, I heard a great story over the holidays.
But explain to our listeners what a fundamentalist is in your mind.
Well, I think in the fundamentalists, it always comes down to the same thing. We're the good guys, and then there is something that is bad.
Well, we have the truth.
And we have the truth.
And the whole truth. Nothing
But the truth. And then there is this thing that is bad. And if we could just get rid of this thing that is bad, then all of our problems would be solved.
Yeah.
So in Muslim fundamentalism, you know, it's like, oh, if we would just all live the way of the Prophet, then all of our problems would be solved. But there is this bad thing, which are these outside Western secular influences. And so we have to strip them away. But they keep on stripping them away until suddenly we can't use kites, we can't use toothbrushes.
You're starting to sound a lot like the God of the Old Testament.
Yeah, exactly.
Kept telling the Israelites, you guys, you got to kill everybody in Canaan. Stop letting them live and marrying them because you're going to start worshiping their gods.
That's right. Yeah. So it's my way or the highway. And, you know, there are different forms of fundamentalism. We had Jordan Peterson on, who was talking about social justice fundamentalism, where essentially, you know, we're now in this paranoid hunt for anything that might be seen as oppression or might be, you know, not totally empathetic, right? So we're looking for anything that the white man might have done, where there's all this gender pronoun stuff. It just becomes this insane chase down the rabbit hole where you're going further and further and further and further with what are fundamentally very simple thoughts. And so, you know, free market fundamentalism, libertarian fundamentalism is the market is good, the government is bad, so we just have to keep on stripping away more parts of the government. And if only we would get rid of all this government, then suddenly all of our problems would be solved. But so unpleasant as this will be emotionally for a lot of people who listen to the show, because what was interesting was we had Jordan Peterson on, and everybody cheered. Right? Everybody in our community was like, that's so great. Thank God Jordan Peterson is calling out those fundamentalists. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the reaction that Jordan Peterson has gotten on college campuses, right? The reaction that he gets in his own community is, you fucking asshole. And that's the nature. Other people's fundamentalists are easy to spot. Our own fundamentalists, we sort of protect. Right. And that's why it takes years to spot a Joseph McCarthy,
right,
or it takes years to spot, you know, that you're in the middle of a witch hunt. And there's a lot of different types of fundamentalism that are going on now. Then, you know, like what I've been saying is there are 31 flavors of fundamentalism.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're different in the sense that some are rocky road and some are, you know, chocolate chip and some are cookie dough. But at the end of the day, they're all ice cream. They're all fundamentalism.
Yeah.
And it may be libertarian. It may be social justice. It may be Muslim. It may be Christian. It may be atheist fundamentalism like Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins, which is the same ideology. Like, you know, we have the truth. Everyone needs to be an atheist, and the problems of the world all come down to religion. And if we could just get rid of religion, then everything would be solved.
Well, because they classify religion as superstitious,
sure,
thinking. It's a fairy tale. Listen to how irrational this is. Look at all the contradictions in the Bible.
But
and they're very articulate about it. Sam Harris, who I'm a fan of, is looking at, again, as Jordan Peterson said, yes, it's also 50 other things.
But also, the big problem is that Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris's head are full of magical thinking. Specifically,
I know what it is.
Yeah.
That human beings are rational.
Yeah.
That human beings have organized brains. That,
yeah,
human beings are divested from their emotional life.
Yep. And
that,
that's
they're not, that the emotional tail doesn't wag the rational dog,
yep,
as Jonathan Haidt once said.
And that's why when, you know, Jonathan Haidt, right, had this interview with Sam Harris, this blog, with,
right,
this,
yeah,
podcast,
you talk about
with Sam
that.
Harris. But the point is that, you know, they talked for hours and you can have a perfectly pleasant conversation between them. I could have had a perfectly pleasant conversation with Peter Schiff. But in the first few minutes, John Haidt says why Sam Harris is not up to date on the science. And that's because he's a rationalist. Mm. And John Haidt is an intuitionist. And the same thing is true of Richard Dawkins. And you'll notice that, like all fundamentalists, they're super literal, right? The atheists, the new atheists, are super literal and super obsessed with exact wording and what the text says and what does it say in the Bible and what does it say in the Quran and all this sort of, mm-hmm, stuff. And that's the nature. They've become so focused on the words and have no sense of what the spirit of the religion is, or,
yeah,
the belief system or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's because they don't fundamentally understand their own emotions. They don't understand how emotions drive their thinking. They've never engaged in ijtihad, right? They've only engaged in jihad.
Hmm.
And that's the big distinction. But, you know, and that's the point of this podcast and, you know, part of the Mixed Mental Arts Dojo is, this is not a safe space. Like, trigger warning, guys. Like, if you want a safe space, there's lots of different safe spaces out there. You can go to college campuses if you want social justice safe space.
This is about the truth.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure it out.
We're trying to figure out reality.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can go to Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom if you want
why?
A safe space.
Because it allows you to actually speak intelligently and solve the problems. You've got to know what the real problem is.
That's right.
If you start saying it's just racism, sexism, and homophobia, if you're going to start doing that the way Bernie Sanders does in these broad stroke concepts,
yep,
it gets very – I don't know, and nobody else knows what to do with those concepts. It's like saying the oceans are super dirty and we better do something to clean it up. Thanks a lot, man. I got no idea how to clean the fucking
That's
oceans
right.
up. The whales, their migratory patterns are being disrupted by blah, 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 by Russian, Chinese, and American naval signals. Oh, well, thanks, doctor. I have no idea what I'm supposed to do about that. Thanks for the stress
yeah.
that my poor whales are all fucked up now. Seriously,
yeah.
I got no idea what you want me to do. You got to get specific and we got to know what the real heart of the problem is.
And you
is it then one example is what we've come down to is it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with culture.
That's right.
Right. Thomas Sowell's work and Nisbet's work and all of these guys and Daniel Kahneman's work and stuff. It has to do well, Joseph Heinrich's work. It has to do with culture.
Right.
Culture. What can you get rid of culturally? What can you borrow culturally? Mm-hmm. What is the mixed cultural art?
Yeah.
Because I'm in the Arctic, I better assimilate some Inuit culture.
That's
if
right.
I'm in the Amazon, I better assimilate some Yanomami culture, or I'm going to starve to death, freeze to death, get eaten alive by insects, etc.
And crucially, I think the important thing to realize about all of these fundamentalists is that they are the biggest obstacle to solving the problems that they claim to be trying to solve. So if you take, for example, take social justice warriors, right? If you actually want to solve racism, here's the narrative that you have to carve out in terms of culture. You have to draw a distinction between African Americans who are originally from the South, right, who live in the ghetto, and African Americans who are from the West Indies. Because African Americans who are from the West Indies do very well. They do as well as any other group. And African Americans who live in the ghetto, right, don't. Right? They do poorly educationally. They have an honor culture. They're very violent and all that sort of stuff. Right? Because it's the same culture as rednecks. So there, and that's why Thomas Sowell says there are black rednecks and there are white rednecks. But the real issue then, you see, is not white or black. It's redneck. It is this very specific honor culture that evolved in this very specific environment in Scotland, which was then transferred to the people who were enslaved. But this is not a narrative that social justice warriors want to get on board with. Because fundamentally, it would mean personal responsibility, and it would mean acknowledging that white liberals, by not being willing to talk about these things for decades, had actually been standing in the way of solving racism.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and so they are self-defeating.
You'd be admitting to flaws in your own thinking.
That's right, and that's not something that any fundamentalist is willing to do.
See, I have no problem with it. I mean, I don't understand why people are so guarded of their preconceived notions.
I mean,
the whole idea is to keep adjusting your approach and keep changing your point of view as you gain more. It's important to continue to be responsive to the evidence, to the data. That seems to be the most. If you really care about solving a problem, that's what you should do. And we all, including me, we all kind of want to be part of our own team. But it goes back to really that one of the more profound statements in my adult life was it's not what you think, it's how you think.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times you think exactly the way your enemy thinks, whether you know it or not.
Well, and that's the thing about fundamentalists. They do. And it's a question of what are your priorities and what is your guiding star, right? And I think certainly for me, and I think for us, like what the guiding star, and obviously we're still defining what this thing is, but I think the guiding star should be reality. You know, the point is that if I'm wrong, it has nothing to do with me, right? It's the idea that dies and fails, right? It's not me. It's not my self-worth.
That's right.
Like, who the hell cares? Whatever
ideas. Well, you can change.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a fundamentally very different person than when I was 25.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
And that's the point.
Yeah.
Thank
God.
Your self-worth, your ability to learn is not at stake, right? So the point is to just keep iterating these ideas, right?
But also, if you start to learn the history is important, because if you start to actually identify how these ideas gain traction.
Yep.
And what the sort of thought mechanism and the cultural momentum is behind these kinds of movements. You'll be able to recognize all of a sudden when the alt-right movement comes along, you'll be able to recognize what it really is. Where you've seen it before, why it's dangerous, because the alt-right will tell you that they're, you know, for gay rights. Have you done any research on them? I haven't done enough research on the alt-right, I don't want to be too unfair.
Well, I think, you know, I think, again, like, you know, history is a long series of reactionary movements, right?
It sure is.
It's the pendulum swinging back and forth.
Well, so is any intellectual move. I mean, think about any book, any seminal thinker was, religion, any of it, was all a rebuttal
That's
to
right.
the to the preconceived notions, scientifically, culturally, philosophically. It's all, I mean, if you read philosophy and you go all the way from, you know, Socrates, Hippocrates, I mean, from the Greeks, Pythagoras, and you go all the way to, you know, whoever it might be, Descartes, it's one big rebuttal after another.
That's right. But the thing is that, you know, in general, these movements tend to not be very discerning. So as best I understand it, a lot of what the alt-right is about is it's a rejection of social justice. It's a reactionary movement to all of the social justice warrior stuff, feminism, all of these sorts of things, right? And, you know, it starts from there's like some grain of truth, like the blind men and the elephant, right? It's not that they're totally off, right? But it's not a very discerning group of people. And so what ends up happening is that they're so busy rebelling against social justice that they end up running all the way to fascism, right?
Well, also talk about being a race traitor, don't they?
Well, so yeah,
Are those white nationalists?
Well, no, I mean, so a lot of it is that, you know, there was all the identity politics on the left. And so in reaction to that, you end up with white identity politics, which is essentially, you know, a white power movement. That's what they are. And, you know, the Richard B. Spencer, who's sort of, they call the leading intellectual, though, how you can be an intellectual and not have learned that asking are Jews people is not a productive thing to do.
Right. Calls him Gollum.
Yeah.
Uses the German. I listen to that
Lugenpresse.
Guy. Yeah. I listen to the guy. And one must ask if they're even human at all. I've heard that before.
Yeah.
I've heard that before over and over again. That's exactly what the Japanese did to the Chinese in Manchuria.
Yep.
That's what the Nazis did to the Jews in the 20th century. That's certainly what the Tsars did to the Jews in Russia. What Pol Pot and Mao Zedong did to anybody who disagreed with them.
Yep.
Especially the kulaks.
The intellectuals.
The intellectuals, et cetera, et cetera. The bourgeoisie.
Yep. So the point is that, you know, he's but I think the important thing to realize there is, again, like you can engage with all of their rationalizations. But the real question is what's going on with these people emotionally. And you know,
that's exactly right.
I think the easiest way to understand, you know, Richard B. Spencer or the alt-right is to understand them as Kylo Ren from Star Wars Episode 7. So I don't know if you watched Star Wars Episode 7, but anyway, what happens is that essentially, you know, you have Han Solo and Princess Leia, and then they have this kid, Kylo Ren. And Kylo Ren is like just really angry at his parents for some reason. And so he rebels against the rebellion and joins the dark side. Right. And, you know, clearly J.J. Abrams, they were trying to make Kylo Ren scary. But within 20 minutes, the internet had figured out that he was just the most emo individual ever. And that's really what Richard B. Spencer is. You shouldn't be scared of Richard B. Spencer. You should tease Richard B. Spencer because Richard B. Spencer takes himself very seriously. He is, you know, kind of the poster child for Descartes' error. And, you know, he fundamentally, again, like Peter Schiff or like any of these fundamentalists, doesn't know how to confront his own feelings. And, you know, if you can't confront your own feelings, if you can't engage in ijtihad, then you just engage in jihad. But it's like this blind, stupid jihad where you're not even fighting against the right things. And you're sort of like blindly, indiscriminately picking up things that are provocative. And, you know, when you work with tweens, as I do, you recognize this behavior. A lot of it is like, oh, look, I'm doing a Nazi salute. Oh, I just used a word that Hitler used. Isn't that so naughty?
Yeah.
And, oh, you're so upset. I have power now.
Yes.
But he's 12. And there are a lot of people who are 12 out there. And that's why 2016
that's so
was so terrible.
Joe Rogan one time was like, we were sitting there and we were probably 32 or 33. And he's like, look at this shirt, this t-shirt. And it was these guys fighting. He goes, look at how cool that shirt is, the guy fighting. And then he pulled out like a gun. He goes, look at this gun, dude. This gun is awesome. And then he pulled out a bow and arrow. He's like, look at this. And he goes, finally, he just goes, I'm 12.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, we're all 12.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's shit we're trying to solve that we've always been trying to solve.
Yeah.
And then, but you know, the
well, no, we're not all 12. You have to work very hard to not be 12.
Well, that's the point. Yeah. It takes real work to, you know, wrestle, to engage in that ijtihad, to engage in that self-struggle and struggle with your emotions and sort through your feelings about your parents and realize that, you know, like, do I love my dad? 100%. Mm-hmm. Do I think that he, like, nailed it and got everything right? No. Right? There are things he got right and things he got wrong. And, you know, same with my mom. And then you have to sort through and you have to be like, okay, what are the good things? What are the bad things? How do I improve? Right? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, you do a little better. And that's the mm-hmm. nature of human progress. But fundamentalists don't do that.
No.
They just, like, figure out some very simple worldview and they just pursue that to the end of the line.
Well, you can see how movements gain traction and you can see how similar Trump is in his thinking to someone like Putin. I mean, Trump tweeted at Arnold Schwarzenegger because Arnold, I guess, supported Hillary, and he had to just go, I mean, he's so blatant about it. Wow. Got smashed in the ratings. Yeah. Didn't come close to Donald J. Trump.
Right.
But then the again, ratings but machine, then again, you Donald supported Trump. Hillary and
Kasich.
And
yeah.
Kasich. So, I mean, he is the most petty human being on the planet.
Well, but 2016 was the year of the petty humans. Mm-hmm. It was the year of the trolls.
Yeah, it was.
And the point is, if we want 2017 to be better, then you need to build a better counter movement. And you
well,
need
is that mixed
mental arts? It is, Brian. And okay. We're going to build the Caliphate. We really are.
All right.
Because that's I think the interesting thing is
I don't know why you make me the poster boy for this.
Oh, it's very simple. Why do you think I do that?
Just because I'm a comedian and.
Because you're perfect, Brian.
Yeah, I'm perfect.
The problem is that, you know, you need a face for the personality.
Also, Mott's fate doesn't really
no, it
make
really
any
doesn't
sense.
Work.
It's a Callan fate. All right. I'll assume the responsibility.
Well, I mean, that's the point. We already know that you don't age. So since you don't age, then
well,
we
listen,
don't even have to Photoshop your face.
You should have seen me trying to box this pro today. It was hilarious. But, yeah. God, at least I moved my head. Yeah.
But anyway, I think that's the real. It's just become very clear to me that, you know, the challenge is calling out all the different fundamentalists and really dealing with all these people and just making it clear why fundamentalism is so appealing. And it's appealing because it takes 3 seconds to get, and then it's just the endless satisfaction of confirmation bias. Oh, it turns out that I was right. Government is the source of all our problems.
Yes.
Oh, it is white men that is the source of all our problems.
Yes.
Oh, it is the West that is the source of all our problems.
Right.
But the conclusions that you reach are utterly ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't fit reality. And that's the point. You need to just reveal that none of these things fit reality. So, you know, it may feel pleasant to be told that you're right, but that's not actually how you learn and grow.
Right.
You learn and grow by finding out the ways in which you're wrong and in which your feelings are not appropriate to reality. And that's how you change. And that's what the Mixed Mental Arts Dojo is about. It's about getting your ass kicked, guys.
I love it.
So you can get better.
I love it. It's been very helpful for me in organizing my brain. Now I know that I'm smarter than everybody I walk by. Smart's the wrong word. What's a better word than smart? Because we always say, well, he's not very smart, but you don't like that word.
Well, it suggests an inherent property.
That's what I mean. So what's a better word? Because, you know, he's not very informed. He hasn't organized his brain accordingly. What's the...
A lot of what this comes down to is knowing how to feel about certain things. So you talked about earlier about knowing what to be angry about.
Yeah.
So a lot we have all.
Well,
of these.
First of all, it comes down to first understanding how your brain works.
That's right.
Right. So understanding that, you know, a great deal of your platform may be built upon something that your past trauma,
mm-hmm.
you know, something that probably happened to you that was either pleasant or more likely unpleasant.
Like, for example, Michael Malice. Right?
Yeah, well, I came from Russia.
Yeah, and
his parents probably suffered.
Yeah, and you could understand why he would hate government.
Yeah.
Right.
Part of these guys also, you know, Michael's just a theatrical guy.
Well, Michael, I love Michael. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I mean, part of it was that I described Michael over the holidays as the hot Russian stripper, right? Because that's what he is. He's amazing, but the point is that...
Great sense of humor.
Great sense of humor. Hot as fuck, but at the same time, it's, you know, you understand that he comes from trauma. And if you're looking for advice on how to build a happy family or a happy society, you don't go to the person who comes from trauma.
That's right.
Like, you don't ask the stripper. right? So, or you help the stripper work through whatever their issues are so that it's like, I understand that you feel this way, Michael. I know why you feel this way. But if we look across many societies, then you can talk about what the proper role of government is. And the key is to restrain the power of government, to have checks and balances. And then, you know, you avoid the worst of these problems.
Right.
And that's also, I think, a large part of what's problematic with you know, these fundamentalists is it's like, you know, Peter Schiff told me this thing repeatedly about the camel, right? And he kept on going, oh, the government's like a camel. It gets under the tent. And once it gets under, it just goes all the way in. And I was like, where does this come from? And it turns out that it comes from Barry Goldwater, who, you know, has been saying this since said it back in 1964 or something. But the funny thing is that I was just in the Middle East and I was with the world's camel experts. And so I talked to them and I said, you know, there's this thing about the camel getting under the tent. And they said there's a thing in the hadith where, you know, they say some guy is asking, you know, I have a
Tell
camel.
Tell us what the hadith is.
So there's the Quran, which is the central holy book, and then the hadith is the sayings of the prophet.
Right.
So in the hadith, basically there's a guy who's like, should I just rely on God or should I tie up my own camel? And, you know, they say, trust Allah, but tie up your own camel. So the real question for Peter Schiff is, why is your camel wandering around loose? Why didn't you tie up your camel? And that's the point, is that it's our job as citizens to restrain the government and to keep the government in check so that it doesn't get underneath
the
tent.
That's what the founding fathers
said. That's exactly
the
right.
The radical notion was that they, the public servants, are perform their task at the leisure of, you know, the populace.
That's right.
You know, at our whims, not whims, but we people, by the government, of the government, for the by the people, for the people, and of the people.
And that's the great challenge of a democracy. If you think that the government has gotten too big, what it means is you need to organize a movement, you need to get people together, you need to create a new consensus.
That's probably what the alt-right would say, what the Tea Party would say,
sure,
what the Libertarian Party would say, what Cato.org would say, you know.
But they just, I mean, and that's the point, is that it's very hard for them to build a big, I mean, you're not going to get any followers from the liberal side saying, let's get rid of the FDA, because it violates their notions of caring and protecting and all that sort of stuff. So what you have to do is you have to carve out a movement that is grounded in reality so that, you know, everybody can see, oh, okay, this sort of addresses a lot of my concerns, and that reasonable people are like, I get that we need an FDA. I also get that it can be too large and become a regulatory barrier to innovation. What's the sweet spot? Right? How big should the FDA be? What power should it have?
Again, don't throw the baby out with the
bathwater. With the bathwater, right.
And apparently, Peter thinks the baby's really small.
Now, and that you should throw away small babies. Which is very Lena Dunham.
Peter, I'm sorry.
So to go back to your original thing about what is, you know, what is smart, what this is really about is about updating your cultural software. So cultural software has improved over, you know, millions and millions of years. And, you know, in general, for most of human history, you know, tools improve very slowly, right? So tools sort of improve from the Stone Age, the Bronze Age, the Iron Age, but it's very slow. And then you reach this inflection point where suddenly you have the Industrial Revolution. And people start to realize if we put some thought into how we make our tools, we could improve really, really, really quickly. And there's the agricultural revolution, slow, slow, slow agricultural progress. And then suddenly they're like, what if we think about agriculture? And what if we think about what agriculture should be? And then it improves really quickly. And we are, and this is not the term to use, the cultural revolution. But the point is that to take all of this science and to think intentionally about how do we design the best set of beliefs, the best set of values, the best set of emotions that serve the needs of this environment, right, the 21st century. And we're intentionally developing a culture. And there's, as far as I know, literally nobody else who's doing that on the planet. Mm. So, you know, we're at...
Thank you, Hunter Motz. I'm going to give you full credit for
that. No, it's really not.
But I'm riding this train and I'm right with you.
Well, but it's also, I mean, fundamentally, I think it's important to realize, what do we know from Joe Henrich's The Secret of Our Success? Humanity's superpower is social intelligence.
That's right.
So it's
well, being able to assimilate culture.
And it's being able to assimilate culture, and also it's a hive mind.
Yeah.
So the reason why we're doing this as a podcast and the reason why we really want this to be a community is because if it's just you and me, it's only going to move so fast. If we are able to draw and gather a crowd of, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, dare I say billions?
Hunter, you are trying to take over the goddamn world.
No, for you, Brian. It's okay. All in service of the Callan Fate.
I'm gonna wear robes, and yeah. I don't give a shit what my wife says. We're gonna monetize this thing, and I'm gonna have a whole bunch. I'm gonna have a harem.
You should.
I deserve it because I have a lot of virility.
That's right.
Box.
Yeah. And because, you know, you're going to lead your people to the promised land.
Naturally.
And if you're going to lead your people to the promised land, it's reasonable that you should get some pootie.
Look, David, the king of the Jews,
yeah.
got himself in a whole bunch of trouble. He got
all kinds
of women pregnant, including ones
yeah.
that were, like, you know, married. So if
Genghis
David
Khan,
can do it,
oh, I mean, it's you know, it's the right of any great visionary
to be able
to fuck a lot of women.
God,
right?
I'm so not a visionary, but I'll take it.
No, but you are, Brian.
What are you,
Brian? Let me ask you. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Right. So you may remember that the first house that I went to after leaving the hospital in Saudi Arabia was your house.
Yes.
Right. And I don't know if you remember this, but as a small baby, you whispered in my ear.
Let me hear.
Go figure out the world's problems and get back to me because I have tennis to play and cheese to eat.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that even as a kid, I had my whole life mapped out because it was on my dream board.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was on my dream board.
Yeah, dream board.
Yeah, because Tony Robbins was a friend of mine when he was 10. Now,
but so the point is, Brian, is that I haven't done any of this. I've just been following orders for the last 35
years. Well, you're a channel. You're a channel.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just, all you are is, think of Hunter as a radio with good antenna. And
well, crucially, it's important to realize I stole all of these ideas from academics and from history and all that
stuff. That's exactly right. Ain't that the truth,
yeah.
right? I mean, so did Malcolm Gladwell. So did Daniel Kahneman in
Everyone.
Thinking Fast and Slow. I mean, all of these guys looked at a lot of different experiments, a lot of different data, and they were just better at organizing. Yes, there are people who have done primary research and that are original thinkers, like
yeah.
myself. No, but it's true. I mean, if you look at it, it takes some of the reverence away when you can start to see how even people that have moved the narrative forward. Have borrowed a great deal from other people.
Brian,
and Newton,
yeah.
the father of science, you know, the father of physics, would probably say the same thing about him.
Well, he said, if I have seen further, it is because I have stood
right.
on the shoulders of giants.
That's right. What are you reading right now?
I'm currently reading Siddhartha Mukherjee's The Gene.
Oh.
Listening to that, and then reading The Gardens of Democracy.
What's the Gardens of Democracy?
So David Sloan Wilson and Robert Kadar,
Kadar,
are obsessed with that book. They think that's the definitive book.
Really?
And so I finally got around to reading it. It's very good.
Got
to
read it.
But essentially, the whole point that they make is that, you know, part of what an understanding evolution, when in 1776, evolution was not around. 1776, you know, Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations had just been published. So part of what we now know is that capitalism is just a special case of evolution, and democracy is a special case of evolution. And so thinking of democracy as a...
And wouldn't Francis Fukuyama agree with that?
Probably.
Liberal democracy is sort of the end result of all
yeah,
this?
The dialectic process.
Yeah.
So it's another way of phrasing a very similar idea.
Mm-hmm.
But so the whole point is that we should be thinking of our democracy as a garden. It's something that needs to be tended, and it's something that, you know, you have to weed it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to deal with parasitism because that's going to appear as a strategy.
Yep.
And you fundamentally have to curate the space. So a garden is not a free-for-all,
no.
right? A garden is a space that, you know, you wall off, and then you're constantly watching what are the things
Your
that are
appearing.
Your
mind is the same way.
That's right. And so, you know, thinking just in terms of democracy as a biological system, which it is, obviously.
I love boxing because, you know, as I was working with this guy, Brandon Adams, who's probably going to be a real contender, and we were talking about how so much of boxing is, all of boxing is not punching. Punching you can learn quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you punch from. Mm-hmm. And then that means it's all where your feet are positioned. And then that means that boxing's way more of a foot game mm-hmm. than it is an upper body game. You can learn how to punch, man. And some people can punch hard, but it's beside the point. It's sort of those little increments. This is a difficult analogy because I'm trying to piggyback what you said, but so much of it is, you know, paying attention to what I like about boxing is that if you're not honest with yourself and if you're not honest with the process, you're going to get knocked out.
That's
you're
right.
not going to make any progress. And I think the same goes for, you know, it's going to be a slower thing, but the same goes for trying to figure the world out. And the same goes for tending to the garden of democracy.
That's right.
Because if you don't weed and if you don't educate yourself on where the hidden poisonous plants are, et cetera, you are going to that thing might grow into a tree and it'll be too late. You got to be careful.
Well, you know, and vigilance, out. You know, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance,
yeah.
right? And crucially, I think the important thing to realize is that, you know, is that it is literally all connected, right? Yeah. And for a Westerner, there's this tendency to be atomistic, right? Where you get super, and that's part of why
it's
there are all these.
That's the problem with academia.
Well, that's the problem with academia, and that's the problem with fundamentalists, right? They're just going to fixate on one thing. And, you know, the reality is that reality sits out there. It's out there. Outside mm-hmm. of our minds, it's out there. It's doing whatever it's doing. And it's up to us to figure out what is this thing that's out there.
Yeah.
And the problem is that, you know, again, like if you're on your first day of boxing, you might look at it and be like, oh, it's just all about punching. Right. But then you're realizing, oh, fuck,
punching. On the first year. Then,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so.
By the way, I love that I've been talking about boxing. Just everybody know, you know, I have no right to even talk about boxing. But I have been doing it for 2.5 years now, and I'm a little obsessed lately. So it's just been on my
mind. It is a good analogy, and all of these things come up endlessly where you think it's one thing, then you realize, oh, wait, this other thing is a huge influence on it, and then this other thing, and then this other thing. And, you know, ultimately, it is all connected.
Yeah.
Like, and that's not a hippy-dippy thing to say. That's just that the reality of reality. Everything influences everything. But it takes humans a long time to figure out what those connections are and what that causality is. Look how long it took us for someone like Newton to come along to figure out that, oh,
that's right.
Wait a minute, gravity is the thing that is connecting the motion of the planets mm-hmm. to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it took a long time to figure that out.
Yeah, look how long it took to come up with a way to grow food using taking nitrogen out of the air,
yeah,
or for that matter, getting a message to somebody in a other than by boat, horse,
yeah.
or foot,
right?
You know, and that was the telegraph.
Yeah,
so these things take time, as do ideas, as do all the good ideas.
And you don't. I think it's always important to realize, which is not something. This is not an idea that I think most people have. That, you know, you're on the bleeding edge of history, but you are in history.
Hmm.
It's not done. It's not mm-hmm. a done process. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very easy for it to feel that it's done, but it's constantly being shaped, and you're in charge of the boat.
Some of the same threats keep rearing their heads, too.
It's endless variations on the same thing.
Look at Russia and there is no democracy.
No, I mean, do you know what
it's dangerous.
Do you know what the conviction rate is in Russia?
Oh, probably 100%.
99%.
Yeah.
99% of
it's
court
no
cases.
Due process.
There's no due process. There's no rule of law.
If you disagree with the government,
mm-hmm.
i.e. with Putin,
mm-hmm.
You better get out of the country or you're going to die.
Well, for example, Garry Kasparov, right, the
yeah.
former world chess champion, has to – now he's a political dissident. He has to travel everywhere with his own food and water.
I know. He's such a gutsy son of
yeah.
a bitch. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another amazing episode of Mixed Mental Arts. I want to thank my colleague, Hunter Motz. This has been Brian Callen. I'm sorry my voice is so full of soda, but I spent a lot of time on stage last night. I never stop, if you know what I mean. I mean, I'll take a 9-day vacation in Tahiti, and then I'll come back running and swinging. Another boxing analogy. All right, guys. Much love.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.